Good morning, all Nach enthusiasts out there. Today we are going to be following through Melachim Beis, Perek Gimel, the third chapter in Melachim Beis. And this is actually a rather short perek. It contains one particular episode, which I will call the Triple Entente, an alliance made between Israel, Yehuda, and Edom against Moab. And there's going to be an interesting twist at the end. So let's jump straight in. The Perek starts off by describing that the son of Ahav, remember Ahav's first son, took his throne. His name was Ahaziah. Ahaziah died pretty soon afterwards, within 2 years of reigning. And he had no children. So his brother, Yehoram, took the throne. This is the other son of Ahav. What ends up happening? So the Tanakh tells us that he was a pretty rotten person. He didn't do good things. The one thing that he did do good was he removed the Baal. He removed the idol worship of Baal that his father had instituted. But he kept on doing the rest of the terrible things in the kingdom. And he did not leave that. So that's kind of the sort of general spiritual temperature at the time. And at this point in time, we've already been told this, but now it is re-emphasized that Mesha, who is the king of Moab, remember Moab is living in the area where Jordan is today, starts rebelling. How does he rebel? So Tanakh explains that he is Heshiv Lemelech Yisrael Mea Elef Karim Umea Elef Elim Tzemer. So apparently he would have to pay 100,000 worth of the shearings of wool, which would be delivered on an annual basis, and he stopped paying that. He withheld those payments. And that was his rebellion. So he no longer wanted to be a tax-paying subsidiary to Israel. This obviously started from the times of Shlomo HaMelech. So what does Israel do? Remember, this is obviously a crucial moment. If you let this slide, then ultimately you've set precedent that any other taxpayers can do the same thing. So Israel has to deal with this pretty severely. What do they do? So Yehoram, who is of course Ahab's son, who's now the king, gets up and he commands all of Israel. He's going to war against Moab. Moab has breached contract. Moab is now liable. Okay. So out he goes. But instead of just going by himself, he turns to Yehoshaphat, who is still the king in the south. Although we described Yehoshaphat's death at the end of Melachim Aleph, Yehoshaphat really has a long reign, which continues through some of the following kings in the north. So he says, "Will you come with me to fight against Moab?" And he says, "Yes, I will come. Komoni komoicha, I'm like you. Ka'ami ka'amecha, my people's like you. Kesusei kesusecha, my horses are like you." Which happens to be the same response that Yehoshaphat had given when Ahab, his father, had asked him to join him beforehand against the war in the north, against Assyria. Remember, we see that Yehoshaphat is very willing, it sounds like, to make deals, to make alliances with the northern kingdom to try to bring the two kingdoms back. Why does he not seem to learn from the previous problems that he had with alliances, and certainly when it came to naval alliances? And the Malbim points out, well, if you look in Divrei HaYamim, which is the parallel narrative of this particular part of Tanakh, it's pretty simple. Because actually it wasn't just Moab who was rebelling against Israel in the north. It was Moab and Ammon and Seir, who were the southern nations on Transjordan, who were rebelling against also Yehuda in the south. So meaning to say, Yehoshaphat had skin in the game, which is why he's saying, "Kami kamecho, we're both suffering because of this potential shift in our tax payments, which are from our subsidiaries." Okay, so he joins the bandwagon. They're going to go together, and what ends up happening is they form an alliance with the Triple Entente with the Netziv of Edom. That means to say, apparently there's no king in Edom, but there is a leader who's been appointed by Yehuda, because Edom is a subsidiary of Yehuda. So they take the governor, who is obviously a yes man for Yehuda, and he comes along with him. So these three kings, they take a circuitous route to get to the battlefront, and they find that there's no water for 7 days. So the king of Israel, Yehoram, gets very concerned. He says, maybe this is an omen, maybe this is a bad sign that something is going to happen in this battle. Sure, we should consult, we should work out. Hashem, how can you kill us, these three kings? So Yehoshaphat very prudently says, well, is there any Navi Hashem, is there any prophet who's willing to talk to us? And one of the courtiers says, well, you know, there is this fellow called Elisha ben Shaphat. Elisha, of course, is a student of Eliyahu. And he was Yotzak Mayim al Yedei Eliyahu. He poured water in front of Eliyahu. And Yehoshaphat says, well, let's go speak to him. Off they go. They find Elisha is not too far away. And Yehoram asks him, well, tell us what's going to happen. And Elisha says to him, I'm not speaking to you. There's no business of me speaking to you. You know, go speak to the other prophets. You don't seek God. So go search your other Avodah Zarah, Yehoram. And Yehoram says, no, but there's three kings at stake. So Elisha says, I'm not speaking to you. I'll speak to Yehoshaphat, the king of Yehuda. And you may want to listen, but you don't warrant he's speaking to a Navi of Hashem. And so he commands him to pull out a musical instrument, and he plays the musical instruments, and the Yad Hashem, the Spirit of God, descends upon him, and he says that you're going to see this river in front of you, and you're not going to see rain, you're not going to see wind, but the river is going to suddenly fill up of water, and you're going to have enough water for you, your cattle, for all your livestock, for your army animals, and it'll be much easier for you to put Moab in your hands. Okay? And you're going to conquer Moab, you're going to clog up all their wells, you're going to have a complete conquest of Moab. And that's his prophecy, very powerful prophecy. Just while we're at this, why is it at this point in time that they're referring to Elisha? Why is Elisha the prophet of choice? So Tanakh tells us because they said he poured water in front of Eliyahu. What does that mean? So the basic understanding of that on a pshat level is that he was a servant Eliyahu. Eliyahu was the person who brought forth water when he stopped the drought. So if Elisha is the student of Eliyahu, he probably knows how to do those kind of things. Rashi brings a medrash that in fact at Har Carmel, Elisha poured the water through his fingers onto that korban. When he doused that korban, that sacrifice in water, his fingers sprouted forth water, which means to say somehow metaphysically he can tap into the powers of the water, and he is able to do that, whatever that means. Just a quick question on this, Rashi, I want to throw out to the audience today, and that is as we're learning this, is that the Har Carmel episode happened before Eliyahu seemingly endorsed Elisha. Just food for thought as to what's really going on over here. Nonetheless, that's they know that Elisha is extremely powerful, certainly when it comes to water, and I would add myself in that we've seen that Elisha has purified the water of Yericho up till now in the last parak as well. Why the music, by the way? Why does he need the music to get this going? So everybody, all the Mepharshim explain that in order to get Nevuah is a sublime state of meditation, of connection with the divine. And in order to get that, there needs to be a certain serenity of spirit. And he was not able to get that without music, which shows you an incredible insight into what prophecy is. It's the greatest level of meditation and focus that a person can reach. So he needed the music to get in there. Why would he need the music? So one opportunity, one way of looking at this is, the Radak points out, is because since Eliyahu had left, his teacher had left, he couldn't access Nevuah until he had this moment, and that's why he needed the music. The other one is the other option is very simply, well, you know, he just got angry. When you get angry, you lose your moral equilibrium. In a certain sense, he couldn't receive a Nevuah. He needed to regain his equilibrium through music because he just got angry with the king of Israel. Okay. And so he requires, and he makes this prophecy about this supernatural event. How does this event actually play out? So the next morning, all of Moab is getting up early in the morning on their borders to make sure that nobody's attacking them. And they look out and they see the water, and they see the water's red. So they say, oh, maybe the kings are in fighting. Maybe Israel and Yehuda and Edom are all fighting themselves. And they run out to battle, and they get completely destroyed in battle against Israel. This is part of the miracles that happened. Why is that they deserve, just to stop at this point for a moment, why is it that Israel deserved such miracles? I mean, this seems so strange. Why are they getting this kind of miracle? So the Malbim points out, when looking at this, as opposed to the Mitzvah Tzion, it says this is an overt miracle. The Malbim says, an overt miracle would be if it rained. This is the desert area. This is not part of the Fertile Crescent. It's Transjordan, it's East Bank. Rain would have been a miracle. What happened is Hashem wanted to minimize the miracle because the credit balance on the side of Israel did not warrant an overt miracle. He wanted them to win the battle, but in the most normal way. So this miracle that was happening was going to be an overflow of, you know, flash floods from the source of the river to in a certain sense to minimize what they really deserve, because they did not deserve more. On the same point, it is interesting to point out that when the Moabites looked into the water and they saw red, it could be, as Rashi points out, that they're watching the sunrise, right? So they're noticing the reflection of sunrise in the water. Or it could also be because they didn't notice, they've never seen water here before, because the water never really arrives at this area, which is why it was that it was red at this point. Now, the last part of this parak is the most intriguing part, the part which really requires a lot of digestion. So as Moab has lost this battle, they make a last-ditch attempt against that triple entente. What do? They take 700 men and they try to storm the battlefront, and they don't succeed. So what do? The pasuk says that Yikaches Benoi, he takes his son Habachor, the eldest son, Shayim Lok Tachtov, the one who will reign in his stead, Vayileu Ola Alachoma, and they burn him alive on the wall. That's what Moab does. Vayiketzef Gadol Al Yisrael, there was a great anger against Israel. What in the world is going on over here? So there's two real different, diverging ways of looking at this. One option the Radak says when quoting his father and his brother. Radak often quotes his father, Rav Kimchi, who says that what happened over here is the reason why Edom joined this triple entente was very simple, is he had skin in the game as well. His son, his crown prince, was captive through Moab, so he was seeking to release his son, and that's why he joined this alliance. But what happened was that Israel was not able to free his son in time, and when Moab started losing the battle, what they do, in spite to Edom joining this alliance, they burnt him alive in front of him to punish him. There was nothing he could do. And the anger that the pastor talks about is Edom's anger on joining this alliance and not being able to save his son because he thought he'd be able to save it. What a terrible cruelty. What a terrible nation we're talking about who does such things. The other option is actually more midrashic, and that is the Radak quotes in the Midrash Chazal, which say, no. You know what happened over here? Even more disturbing is that Moab says, what is the strength of Israel that they're winning this battle? So they asked their sorcerers, and the sorcerers said, well, they're the progeny of Avraham Avinu. What did Avraham Avinu do which created such tzchus? Well, he sacrificed or tried to sacrifice his son. So Moab says, well, let me sacrifice my own son, not Edom's son. Moab took his own crown prince and burnt him alive to God as a sacrifice to gain divine favor. And there was ketzef on Yisrael. There was anger on Israel. Why? So the Midrash continues to say, simple, because Israel was no better at this point in time. Although they weren't doing human sacrifice, their Avodah Zarah was no better. This was a kitrug on Israel. This was in fact an indictment on Israel, and this would brought them to a very low nadir because they did themselves not deserve a miracle when their enemies were doing something of such passion. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.